Hello, friends. Punster here with a little Reckless Attack April Fool's Day poem for you. One villain and two villain and three villain and four. Four villains they make a gang, but so do many more. Over hill and highway are villains they do go, causing lots of trouble for our superheroes. And speaking of our heroes, wouldn't it be just great if there was a compact summary that could tell you their names, a little bit about them, and how they all got together? I thought so, but what do I know? I only deal in puns, not tales of hero teams. Hey, wait a minute. What's that music?
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a hero team that started forming months ago, or longer it would seem. The first was a mighty fighting man, his weapons were his fists, and when it came to fighting crime, so rarely did he miss, so rarely did he miss. The foes, they started getting rough, the fists replaced by guns. If not for the joining of the multi-arms, our heroes would be done. Our heroes would be done. Joined by two more with powers dark and supersonic flight, with Armistice and Mandark too. Jojo, Jojo, called for Joes, Gargoyle, Petra, and their flight.
I like how they worked Jojo into the song.
Four Joes.
Four Joes.
That might be my favorite part. Four Joes.
Yes.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Wow.
What have you graced us with this fine day?
What have you done, Steve?
I would like to welcome you all to the fourth installment of the April Fool's Day adventure.
Is it really four?
Is it four?
Yes, the first one was all puns, no music. Then we had Ravenloft.
Oh, yeah.
Then we had the rock,
geology
the,
puns.
The rocks
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
And then we have this one.
I honestly, I thought Ravenloft was the first one. But
so
I think that
I.
one just stands out in my mind so much because, like, I still bop to that music.
Yeah, right.
So this time, a little bit different. We are, traditionally speaking, a 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcast, except for today and possibly next time. We are actually going to be playing a game called Marvel Saga, which is a game from the 90s, and it was created by TSR. And instead of using dice, it uses cards. There is a deck of 96 cards, and they all have kind of various themes on them and numbers associated with them. And so kind of pick up the rules a little bit as we go here. But all of the players will have cards in their hand. That's their hand size. That also represents their health. So if they ever run out of cards due to damage, they would be unconscious.
I will say, I don't think I've ever played a TTRPG that uses cards before like this, like as the main mechanic. And I think that's pretty cool.
And we're choosing Marvel Saga specifically because Steve has prepared a superhero adventure for us for this
April
Fool's,
indeed.
Right? Which is why we have a theme song and a team name, right?
Yes.
Is our name Hero Team?
That was what you guys selected. It was Hero Team. And okay. I said, are you sure? You said, let's go with that. I said, all right, because we're doing the music.
I don't recall that. Yeah. I don't remember that.
If I'd known it was going to be immortalized in song, I would have chosen something different.
Yeah,
Steve.
Let's go back to the tape.
Yeah.
I'll need to double check that.
All
with
right,
my legal
well,
team.
We'll scratch this and we'll come back later after I've redone all of the music. And
June Fool's Day, everyone.
And cut there. And welcome back, everybody. It's been several months. And so this is the 2025 April Fool's Day adventure entitled A Valiant Attempt at a Re-image of the Dark Horse Marvel in DC. You've slightly been introduced to everyone's Marvel character through song. So we're going to kind of go around the table now, and everybody's going to say who they're playing, who they are, and who they're playing.
But I have a question real fast, Steve.
Oh, sure.
Before we even get to the introductions, similar to the previous April Fools, there have been lots of puns in your episodes, and I imagine this one is no different.
It's a little bit different. This one was a little weird,
yeah.
Just because the story that I wanted to tell that was really fun, that I think would go with the kind of like an April Fool's Day thing, did not lend itself to quite a lot of puns. but I will say, since we do have this music going, if you guys know the original television show or theme that the music came from, go ahead and call that out. And basically, that will give you luck.
Okay.
For the turn. What that means is whenever I draw what's called the narrator card at the beginning of every turn, you then can each draw one yourselves, and then you can individually use whichever one you prefer, the one that I drew or the one that you drew.
Okay. Gilligan's Island.
Yes. Very good.
That one's a good warm-up.
That was a good
one.
Yeah.
Doesn't count.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to hold on to my luck for whenever the turn starts.
Go ahead and draw your cards up to your hand size.
And to Steve's earlier point, while we're getting our cards situated, I'll go ahead and introduce myself and my character. Hi, everyone. I'm Jonathan, and usually I play Checkers, the Grung Druid, and his trusty frog pals, Mango and Junior. But today, I am playing a very special character, a hero with a dark past, a dark secret, a dark force, some might say. I'm playing the character Mandark. He is a scrawny guy with a big head and a bowl cut. Looks like your stereotypical nerd. And he became a superhero when he was doing an experiment in order to spite his rival. And the laboratory that he was working in accidentally exploded. Through that explosion, he came into contact with the Dark Force, which is a strange and mysterious, cold, slimy force from beyond that doesn't really seem to like him very much. So anytime he uses his powers, he has to convince the Dark Force to do stuff for him. And it's just kind of a tenuous relationship between Mandark, the Dark Force, but they manage to fight crime and do reasonably well. And I'll pass it to my left.
Hi, I'm David, and I have to make up a character real quick. Hold on. I had the name, and that was about it.
I'll go next. You pass it to me instead, Jonathan.
And I'll pass it to Nathan.
Playing an even darker character with an even darker backstory and darker color scheme of costume. I'm Nathan. Hello. Today, I will be playing the extremely cool, extremely well-pouched, extremely edgy anti-hero. I'm not even going to say superhero. He's way too gray for that. Today, I am playing the vigilante Armistice. And I will describe nothing more about him until appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Hi, everyone. I'm Sophie, and I normally play Valeska Carter. But today, I'll be playing the darkest of characters. Maybe one made completely of obsidian, because it's superhero and it's the darkest rock I know. That's technically glass.
It's very brittle.
Ooh, but sharp. Let's go, Nathan.
That's like really deep when you think about it. Yeah. You know, it's like sharp, but also like really breakable and fragile. And like that, since really, I think the 1970s run of the comic books, I think authors have really leaned into that in a good way.
And it will suit Petra, my gargoyle, who's not the IP of Gargoyles TV.
It's important to know.
Yeah. Important to note that. And across the table from me.
Hi, everyone. I'm David. And normally, I play Caskrin Brightmane. But today, I play a mysterious man. A mysterious character. Who's not quite as dark and edgy as the rest of these fine folks here. But you may call him Jojo. Jojo Jojo. He is a bespectacled, well-mannered British gentleman wearing a suit and tie, but you can see the remnants of a hard life on the tattooed backs of his hands, as he is well used to punching things and taking hits in return.
You have the air of someone who punches about.
Yeah, yeah. I punch a lot.
Have you considered superhero-y, my fine man?
And for Joe, has decided that it's time to clean up crime in our fair city. He's been listening to the police scanners, and he doesn't like what he hears. He's decided it's time to take action, and so he's called on the three of you. Petra, Armistice, and Mandark. You all have been chosen specifically for your powers and
edginess.
Moral flexibility.
You are all kind of sitting around, and the evening news is on the background. So you're kind of half paying attention while you're doing some other stuff. The newscaster comes on and starts off behind the desk saying, "Good evening and welcome to the evening news. Our top story tonight, disaster struck a ceiling fan convention when the scheduled entertainment, Dr. Ewing and his pole vaulting sheep, took the floor. According to one eyewitness, everything was just fine until one extremely high vault, and that's when the sheep hit the fan. Coming up later, convicted hitman Jimmy Two Hands Pentemacher confessed today that he was once paid $10,000 to beat a cow to death in a rice field with two small porcelain figures. Police admit this may be the first known case of a knick-knack paddywhack. On a more somber note, today marks the anniversary of the disappearance of Austin Bancroft, the son of philanthropist Marcia Bancroft and defense attorney Solomon Bancroft. Austin disappeared 30 years ago today. He was last seen in the vicinity of the Lincoln Memorial. His family said that he had wanted to see the spelling error that was in the text at the memorial. The word future was originally engraved as euture in Lincoln's second inaugural address on the north wall of the memorial. As has been reported earlier this year, given the recent discovery of proof of the multiverse theory, this error is one of the few unique qualities of our timeline and is used as a fixed point for the identification of this universe. Our thoughts are with the Bancroft family today.
Ah, quite the variety tonight. The news never fails to lighten and surprise. And for Joe, is, I imagine, in a very luxurious sitting room with the rest of you, in his personal mansion here in town. Since I'm saying it, it's canon, obviously.
Yeah,
right.
But there's a nice fire going, the TV's going on in the background, and Forjo is sipping a luxurious aged whiskey, about ready for the nightly police scanner to come alive. What do you think, Mandark? Don't you think it's such a shame about these disappearances?
So I think Mandark is sitting in the corner playing video games. and he's got like a 12-pack of cola next to him that he's just been drinking out of all night.
Now a 4-pack of cola.
Yeah, right. And there's discarded cans all around him. And Mandark just kind of looks up from his video game console. Just kind of like, huh? Yeah, sure. And then like goes back to playing video games.
Another lost soul. Armistice grunts out from the deep shadows in this manor estate. Probably had to go to like another room with all the lights off to get the effect appropriately. But all you see is a trench coat and white eyes slitted together.
You see the double French door balcony open as Petra enters from the rain and saying, "It is a shame."
Petra, how many times have I told you, wipe your feet before you come in?
I shook off in the vestibule.
You're dripping water everywhere.
That's what the rugs are for.
Actually, the slightly shredded rugs from your clawed feet.
Hey, he invited me to the team. This is how I am.
Good. Ruin these symbols of archaic capitalism.
So, Jojo. Suddenly, your police scanner alert kind of goes off, and you get a nice little boop, 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 boop.
Oh, it's time. And
treating it like it's like Little Orphan Annie. Yeah.
Jojo goes to turn on the radio and like kind of moves it, seeks the right channel to hear the police scanner like crackle and come to life.
As you are doing that, there is some commotion on the television, as one of the newscasters is handed something and says,
Breaking news. We interrupt our regular program for this special news bulletin. A robbery is in progress at the downtown DC location of Pemput Labs. Pemput is on the cutting edge of military technology and currently holds a number of government contracts. Police are already on the scene and are involved in an active shootout with the Kilobytes, a local mutant gang that has been causing trouble in the past months with increasingly daring corporate heists. I am also getting reports that the superhero Doppler Dude is currently providing cover to help civilians escape the area. Police are warning people to stay away from the downtown facility, given the gang's complete disregard for civilian casualties and public safety.
Oh, Kilobytes, eh? I always liked their style. Taking down those wretched corporations that drag this city through the muck. But Pemput Labs, I remember their tech from when I was in the service. I'm conflicted. And he stares into the middle distance.
Jojo Jojo, from your continued monitoring of these police channels, you are familiar with the gang, the Kilobytes.
Right, yes.
Generally speaking, there are four members. The leader, Overbite. Then we have Frostbite.
Sure.
The heavy on their team is Trilobite. And of course, their communications person, Soundbite.
So
they have a PR person.
So yeah, to clarify, this is their PR person, not like a Sonic-based villain, or is it both?
It is both.
Okay.
They're communications, meaning like how they communicate with each other.
Got okay. it. I like our version better.
Yeah. I love how we all went to PR marketing.
Yeah, they hired a consultant to like, you know,
social media manager, Soundbite.
Mm-hmm.
These ruffians again. They narrowly escaped us last time, but this might be our night to finally catch them and end their reign of terror once and for all.
What are we waiting for? Let's get them.
Mandark's gonna, like, put his little video game console down, just stretch out on the carpet.
I imagine you just let out a huge...
just stretch out on the carpet. He's surprisingly skinny for how much cola he drinks, just all the time.
Ain't that
the and also surprisingly mellow for the amount of sugar and caffeine intake. Mm-hmm.
But he just says, "Hey, boss, how do you want to handle this?"
If I know that Overbite, that clever little bastard, I know he's expecting us. But he won't be expecting us to be expecting him to be expecting us. If we can catch them off guard, maybe this will be the time we finally put them behind bars. Quickly, to the Rolls Royce mobile!
Just my shotgun!
All right, so you all kind of pile into the Rolls Royce.
Mobile.
The Rolls Royce Mobile. Sorry.
Does Petra join us in
Petra's so fine.
Petra is
good.
Like it, 7 foot gargoyle. Because
it
would not fit.
It's a 4-person car, and then there's 3 of us and the driver.
Yeah.
So I have my own driver taking us there.
Yeah. You're
who's your Kano. What's your driver's name?
Jeeves.
Okay.
You all kind of rush into the car. Jeeves says to you,
Sir, I heard on the radio. I assume we're making our way downtown then?
Yes, yes. There's not a moment to lose.
Fastest possible speed then, sir. Very good.
And Jojo Jojo puts on the police scanner radio too on the car and is like following it as we're driving downtown.
All right.
At a very demure pace.
So Jeeves very calmly puts the car into drive, and then you, all of you in the car are pinned backwards into your seat as the Rolls-Royce mobile takes off at an alarming rate out of your garage and around the circle driveway and out into the street and downtown. After several minutes of driving at breakneck speed, you enter the downtown area, and that's when you hear Jeeves call to you from the driver's seat.
We're approaching, sir. Would you like to tuck and roll, or shall I stop this time?
Tuck and roll, tuck and roll. There's not a moment to lose.
Very good, sir, very good.
Jojo, Jojo, you hit a button and all the doors spring open.
Yep.
I think Petra knows exactly what's about to happen. And with practice with just practice, will grab Mandark and Armistice by the back of their shirts as they get ejected from the vehicle, and Jojo is the only one who tucks them in.
And Jojo flings himself, like, unclasps his seatbelt, like, very calmly, and then, like, takes a final sip of tea and then hurls himself out of this car, tucks and rolls, and then does, like, the superhero three-point stance before standing up.
And then Petra places Mandark and Armistice right behind Jojo, like they did that, and it's like 10 feet away by the time Jojo turns around.
Kilobytes, your reign of petty crime is over. The hero team is here.
I really thought there was a placeholder on the application. Damn it.
Forjo points off into the distance. What does he see?
It's a good question. You have gotten relatively close to Pamphlet Labs. From what you can see, it's a relatively large building, but there is a hole in one of the walls, and there's currently some smoke coming out of it. You also see, standing outside this big hole in the wall, two members of the Kilobytes.
Ah, do I recognize which ones they are?
From this distance, yes. It is Frostbite, and it is Trilobite.
Ah, okay. So it's a frost guy and then kind of their big beater, like, kind of guy.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
You also see near that is kind of a spherical, a dome of fog, which you remember hearing that Doppler Dude was here providing cover so that people could escape from the Kilobytes. And floating out of the fog coming towards you is Doppler Dude in his black and white striped outfit. And he says, "The Kilobytes have stolen something. I don't know what. I am working on getting the civilians out. Can you take out the Kilobytes?"
"Of course we can, Doppler Dude. That's why we're the hero team." And do Frostbite and Trilobite seem like they've noticed us?
It does look like they're keeping watch, and they have clocked you, but you're still a ways away.
Okay. Jojo will make direct eye contact at Trilobite from way across the distance, and he will begin walking forward to them and says, "Halt, Kilobytes! Cease your petty crimes!" And begins to, like, go into, like, a walk and then a jog and then a full sprint towards them.
Trilobite turns to face you, looks down at Frostbite, and just says,
"Jojo is mine."
And you actually, as you are running towards each other, you can feel the ground shaking as his footsteps get closer.
Armistice will be moving into the shadows, but still trying to keep a reasonable distance away.
And now that we've kind of engaged the Kilobytes, Mandark is going to assume his Dark Force form.
Ooh.
tell us about that.
It's essentially just his whole body just goes dark, and he just kind of lets off these little wisps of smoke. And what I'm actually going to do is use my phasing power. So I'm going to activate phasing, which means that, you know, stuff just phases through me. It's an agility power, so I'm not going to discard an agility card for that, but I will just use this 4. Coupled with my phasing, which means a total of 8.
Okay, that is enough to kick in your phasing.
And I will also start sort of walking towards the battle, right behind Forjo, but at a much more calm pace.
Okay.
Petra would begin flying straight at Frostbite, like a speeding bullet.
So, if you're picturing a comic book, we have one panel here where you saw Petra grab Armistice and Mandark and land them, and Forjo's just kind of rolls out of the car, and the car kind of careens out around the corner to a presumably safe distance. Forjo's locks eyes with Trilobite, and they just start charging each other in the next panel. In the background, slightly above, we have Petra flying directly at Frostbite, who has shot her arms down towards her sides, and as ice jets come out, has begun to lift into the air. So I pulled the narrator card, which means for any difficulties or for anything that our heroes decide to do, basically we are going to add 5 to the difficulty of them trying to do it.
Armistice has made his way up to a second story window. just shoves an elbow through one of the panes of glass so he can get a clear line of sight. And he just is muttering to himself. He sees Petra start to fly around the battlefield and start to bead in on Frostbite. And he's like, oh, see if I can give Petra the advantage. He throws open the trench coat that he's obviously wearing. And across his chest is his logo, which is a target, like a crosshair, which has five different arms going around the edges of it, pointed out, each of them flexed in huge biceps, and each of them holding a different gun.
Yeah.
Nice.
And from under his trench coat, an arm emerges, and then another arm, and then another arm. And this keeps going for some time until a veritable stockpile of weaponry has been emerged and brought to bear.
So basically, if that scene with Doctor Strange where he all of a sudden was floating and all of a sudden all those arms came out, if each one had a gun,
yes,
that's kind of what we're looking at.
That's kind of his deal, yes.
Okay.
And he stares down at Frostbite. Done terrible things in my past, and now I must atone for them by stopping other terrible people like you. And then a shot rings out as he opens fire.
And the way we're doing your shooting is that you can shoot twice.
Yes.
The first one happens now. The second one is what's called a contingent action, which basically goes after we resolve the first round of combat, your second shot goes off.
Correct. So I'm going to play my agility card, my four agility card. The one thing that Armistice is good at is how many arms he has, and then using them to fire guns. And so that is a total of 23 to hit.
Wow.
Jeez.
Okay. We're not messing around here. So the way this works is we compare your 23, which is basically your to hit,
yep,
against the agility plus the narrator card of the person. If you get more than that, then you hit. And looking at their agility, that gives us a total of not that much.
Hey, I'll take that. Nice.
The shot rings out.
As all of this action is going on, Armistice is still muttering to himself.
I wish I was normal. Wish I wasn't crafted into the perfect weapon. I wish I didn't fall into that vat of radioactive arms. But what I am is what I choose not to be, which is a killer.
And so the last thing that Petra sees before whatever it is that you do on your turn is just a high-octane, military-grade beanbag absolutely clobber this ice person square in the head in a non-lethal, I don't kill people kind of way. He has a lot of guns, but they don't kill people, obviously.
One of them is called the Finisher, and it just launches beanbags.
Yeah, they all do. There are no lethal rounds in any of Armistice's guns.
What is your damage?
Well, because I am both extremely skilled at firearms and extremely skilled at regular arms, that is 27 total points of damage.
Jesus.
Cool.
Wow. From that, we are going to do a little subtraction of Frostbite's strength score plus their ice shield ability.
Mm-hmm. I expected yeah, something along those lines.
So that will actually negate 20 points. Oof. However, 7 of that gets through.
Petra, seeing the ice shield shatter, knowing Armistice has hit Frostbite, grabs Frostbite under the armpits as they like basically fold over from the force of Armistice's bullet and grabs them and then just flies them, dragging them up the wall of this laboratory using her aerial combat ability.
All right.
Fucking sick.
Yeah, right. That's so cool.
Okay, so the difficulty for that, for your flight, is going to be 4. It's going to go down to 0 because you have your aerial combat.
Mm-hmm.
And then what cards are you playing?
I have a question.
Yes.
Does my card determine the amount of damage
yes,
that will be done?
You're using your claws, right? Do you have the
claws? I have claws.
You have a claw power?
Yes.
So it's going to be the claw power plus whatever card you play is going to be your damage.
Fuck Frostbite up! Play that 9!
I was watching you be like, so does the number affect damage too? And I was like, oh, I see what Seth is looking at. I get it.
So the question is, do you have any kind of fighting ability, skill?
I've got brawling, I've got wrestling, I can intimidate the shit out of them as I am dragging them up this wall.
Okay.
I can put them in a trance if I want to.
The reason I'm asking is brawling.
Got natural weapons.
Brawling and wrestling, would use strength.
Okay.
If you had martial arts, then the agility becomes your trump.
No, okay. I just want to do more damage.
Gotcha. Steve. All right. So what is your total? Your claws power plus the card you played.
13.
13. Okay.
Maybe we all just want to do more damage.
Your claws kind of sink in, and you can feel that Frostbite is just radiating cold. And when your claws go in, you can feel it. It's like the blood, instead of being warm, is icy.
Steve, question. I don't think Petra can feel this, as she is stone.
That's up to you. That is a character choice.
Off of your turn, I will Google how good of a conductor obsidian is.
Thank you.
So that was
13 points.
Okay.
Straight through the ice shield as it's shattered right now.
She kind of arches backwards in pain. Her eyes go a very light blue color, and you can see little wisps of light blue coming from her eyes. She looks at you and she says, "My turn." And her hands slam into you. You have the option to dodge if you would like. The way that works is it's your agility plus a card you play is basically her target number to hit you. Okay.
I'll put an 8 on there, so the total of 18.
Total of 18. Okay. Her ice power is 15 plus the 3 is 18, which is exactly what she needs to hit you.
Boo.
She kind of hits you with her icy form and 22 points of damage, which you resist with your strength.
There'd be 3 points left over from my natural armor. And my strength.
Okay. So it's 3 points of damage. You have to discard a card of value 3 or more. You can possibly heal that damage in the next round with the next narrator card if it's positive. Otherwise, your hand is going to remain reduced until you actually heal that damage.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hello, everyone. GM Nathan here. And welcome once more to The Midroll. This is where I remind you to follow us on all the social medias, particularly on Twitter at @reckless_attack, where we are posting a variety of frogs and memes and frog memes and meme frogs. You can find all our socials by visiting our website at recklessattack.com and much more. If you like us, consider supporting us on Patreon. It's one of the best ways to help us grow and improve the show. Early ad-free episodes, level-up talkbacks, and oodles of other stuff await you there at a variety of tiers. Lastly, don't forget to tell a friend if you're enjoying the show, or let us know by leaving a rating or review on your podcatcher of choice. That's all for me. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
All right, who's next?
So Trilobite and Forjo are just charging at each other. Similar to Armistice, Mandark is sort of walking behind Jojo, his shadowy form phasing in and out of this reality. And he's going to see if he can give his partner a little bit of advantage here. I'm going to use my Dark Force control. And okay. Every time I do this, I have to convince the Dark Force to help me out. which means it just takes more cards for me to do that. But I'm willing to do that for my friend Forjo. And I'm going to try and break Trilobite's momentum with a big old spiked wall. So right in front of Trilobite, as he's charging down the way towards us, a big shadowy wall full of spikes just appears in front of him, and it's going to try and slow him down.
So go ahead, and what card are you playing to add to your Dark Force control?
I'm going to use this 7. It is not the same suit as my Dark Force control. I'm going to discard a card to try and convince the Dark Force to help me out. but the total is going to be 22.
Total is 22. Okay. And I'm going to say this is kind of a, you're basically going against their physical toughness, right?
Sure.
To get through that. However, Trilobite is definitely not able to slow down in time.
Okay.
This wall of spiky darkness erupts in front of Trilobite, and Trilobite is just charging. And the wall comes up. For Joes and Petra, you both hear
Uno
as wham! He collides with this wall. The wall shatters into spikes, these dark, cold spikes kind of flying everywhere. And Trilobite stumbles through. He does take a little bit of damage,
sure,
but it doesn't stop the momentum as much as you were hoping.
Jojo is the last one to act, and he sees Trilobite impact this wall, break through it, stumble a little bit, but continue running forward towards him. Forjo is going to channel all of the ancient wisdom and learnings that he's taken from the Shaolin monks that tutored him all those years ago.
Colonialism, the superhero, hell yeah.
Classic Marvel choice, to be honest.
The all of the money that he paid them to teach him this one move
courses through his veins
as he jumps in the air and executes a perfect flying knee kick. And he is going to jam his knee directly into Trilobite's face as they collide into each other.
Nice.
I'm going to use brawling, and I'm going to play my sixth trump, which lets me draw another card, which is also a four trump, so I'm going to draw again, which is a four trump, so I draw again.
I'm just going to one-shot Trilobite. All right.
It finally ends, but my total is going to be a 32 strength.
Wow.
Okay. Against Trilobite's fleshy, very...
exposed.
Yeah.
Unprotected face.
His exposed, unprotected face.
Trilobite crashes through this dark force wall as you leap into the air with your knee extended. As you're flying towards Trilobite, you flash back to the monastery or wherever you had wherever you had spent this money to learn these skills.
Not and skills, the one skill.
The one you, where you learned
this move.
This one move. And you see the weeks of preparation of you trying to jump higher and higher and higher with a knee extended.
And just like them hitting like my one knee over and over to strengthen it.
Planks of wood and
until it was tough as steel.
Until your one knee developed a cap that was twice as large as your mm-hmm. other knee. And this is the kneecap that is currently headed right at Trilobite's face. Your total was?
32.
So Trilobite's a strong guy, but can only absorb 22 points of that.
Okay.
Trilobite, who just got kneed in the face for probably more damage than he's ever taken at one time in his life. However, standing there, he is going to try to punch you. He's going to hit you with a 22. You have the option to dodge if you would like. Basically, it's your agility score plus a card you play.
Is Forjo really the kind of person who's going to dodge?
I mean, Jojo is not going to dodge because Trilobite is approaching him, and he made this choice.
Mm-hmm.
That is, your logic, once again, is infallible.
And so I choose not to dodge.
Okay. So that would be 22 points. You subtract your strength, plus any armor you have.
I was like, wait, I take all of it?
Oh no!
Can I dodge? But
a little bit
in a cool way. That's like still we're dueling
in a manly way. I take 9 points of damage.
Then you have to discard a card or cards totaling 9 or more.
Yes. However, while I don't have that much strength, I do have some pretty tough skin. Does his weapon do +4 or less? Is it a weapon rating?
Oh, I see. It is actually just his strength, so there is no weapon rating. He's not using a weapon. He's just punching you.
Okay, so since there's no plus to this weapon, Jojo has spent his youth in the frigid mountains of Aspen, Colorado, and it has toughened up his skin to the point where nothing but the most deadly weapon can pierce it.
Ooh.
I have bulletproof skin, so weapons that are rated 4 or less cannot hurt me.
Nice. So you take no damage from the punch. However, what is the difference between the 22 and your strength.
9.
You are knocked back 9 feet. Just
okay.
And you slide, you keep your feet, but there is now a little bit of a little bit of distance between the two of you.
Okay. Jojo has been knocked back, but he is undeterred.
It's pretty anime.
Yeah. Right?
Being absolutely unhurt, but also knocked backward full feet.
He's like bleeding from like the his hairline, like a little trickle of blood down his face.
It's a blood pack. It's totally fake.
Yeah.
Well, there's two places that the heroes technically bleed. Either it is the scratch on the cheek or it is the corner of the mouth.
We're going to go with cheek on this one.
Okay. Let me collect any used cards.
Could I perhaps end the turn?
Oh, I'm sorry.
With a little
fun
thing as well.
You have your contingent action. Your contingent action goes off as well.
So frostbite, poof, 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 just getting dragged through window after window, floor after floor. I presume conked through concrete and everything. And just out of the corner of your eye, you see yet another beanbag just like bonk.
And to be clear, this is, again, a buddy cop between Petra and Armistice.
Oh, yeah. This is the go-to move.
So Petra is holding Frostbite. Like, Petra's arms are extended above her, holding Frostbite, so that there is a headshot available for a beanbag.
Very good.
Got him. I'm also, it's another 4, so it should hit. And there's no ice shield this time.
That is correct.
So I would like that individual to please take 27 points of beanbag damage, please.
They don't get the shield subtracted this time, but they do subtract their strength from from the total. Petra, you see Frostbite. You're kind of lifting her up, and her head is then exposed. And again, this beanbag slams into it, rocks her head backwards, and she kind of goes limp in your arms.
Nothing personal, kid.
Which takes us to the next panel. The narrator card is the Hulk 9.
Oh, dang. Wow. So starting off this round, can I go first?
Do it, Mandark!
I would like to put a motion, Jonathan, please.
Yeah.
So Mandark sees off in the distance, Petra and Armistice just team up against Frostbite and just see her body go limp. And he thinks to himself, I can use this. So he's going to call out to the Dark Force to see if he can transfer some damage between Frostbite and Trilobite, who is fisticuffing with his boss, Jojo Jojo. Two dark tendrils appear from Mandark as one connects to Frostbite, one connects to Trilobite, and it's just like sucking the life force and transferring damage between the two of them. I'm going to use this 9 that I have to try and keep them from resisting it. On top of the power that I'm using for that, which is regeneration, that's going to be a total of 30.
Great googly moogly. Trilobite obviously is going to try to resist this. However, with the 9, that only gets them to 28.
Nice.
Wow. So I'm just trying to transfer all of Frostbite's damage over to Trilobite. And that will probably wake Frostbite up, but I know that she's in the process.
It will heal Frostbite, but Frostbite is also in the almost...
And Trilobite is probably not vulnerable to beanbags, but Frostbite is very vulnerable to beanbags, as we found out.
You just hear Petra yell out, "Mandar, stop taking my damage!"
No, I need it. I thrive off of it. It's for a good cause. damage for the poor, please.
Alms.
You mean arms for the poor.
Arms for the poor. All of a sudden, Frostbite... Petra, Frostbite in your arms, her eyes snap open, and again, that little, there's like the beginnings of the wisps of blue around her eyes. You see this pulse come from the dark force that is wrapped around her and gets slammed into Trilobite. It just gets rocked, and you see he has kind of these like plates of various metals that are kind of all over his body, and you see underneath them, you actually see bruises form. He stumbles for a second. He's like, "What?"
And Mandark has been phased out of reality this whole time, so he's struggling to breathe a little bit.
That's true. That is true. When you're phased, you have no air.
I'm obsessed with that as a consequence for your powers, just to make them even a little sadder.
Right. Not good. Only do you have to ask the Dark Force to give you a favor, like you also can't breathe.
Pretty
it's
good.
It's the whole thing. I have to make an easy strength check to maintain my phased powers.
Okay.
I believe I'm going to use this 2 that I have in my hand. I believe I did hit a 4 for an easy check. Is that right?
Easy is a base of 4, but remember, the narrator card gets added to all of that.
Ah, well, I don't know if I can do that then.
You can always drop it and become unfazed.
I don't like that.
Or pass out.
Or I could pass out.
That's a pretty fun one.
In which case, you would become unfazed. So
yeah,
you know,
right. So with the cards that I have, I cannot make that easy strain check.
Do we use luck for this?
No,
absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Wow, voted down on the luck.
Right.
No,
I want to try to save you, but I was outvoted.
So you just hear Mandark as he's forced back into existence by his lack of ability to breathe. I'm no longer phased and can be targeted.
Petra, seeing this dark tendril wrap around Frostbite, will change course and from a height dive bomb, driving Frostbite into the ground. Petra is hoping to use her aerial combat to fly as fast, like Falcon dive down, driving Frostbite into the ground.
Non-lethally, right?
Definitely not lethally.
We don't kill on this team. Petra, we're heroes, damn it.
Petra doesn't kill, but the ground might. And that's uncontrollable, really.
Yeah.
Gravity's a real bitch.
Yes. As we've established.
Okay, go ahead and it would be a flight power is what you're using to basically drive Frostbite into the ground.
Okay, that's 14.
14, okay. Frostbite is going to resist with their strength plus the narrator card, which is 14.
Ugh.
You slam her into the ground, but don't do enough damage to get through her frost and essentially knock the wind out of her, but no actual damage. And she looks up at you with the frost dripping from her eyes and says, "Nice try."
Jojo picks himself off the ground. And he thinks, maybe this is an opportunity we can take Trilobite in for questioning. And so he stands up and he is going to put on his most menacing face. And this is the face that he went to the FBI and worked with their best negotiators in order to perfect the sort of menacing aura that he's projecting as he calmly walks towards Trilobite and is just saying, "You don't stand a chance. Just give up, Trilobite. It'll all be so much easier if you just give in." I'm going to use Intimidation with my 7 trump. And with the 7 trump, I'm going to draw again and add the next card to it. I've drawn a 1 trump, and I'm going to draw one more time. A 6 trump, I'm going to draw again.
What?
Finally ending
oh my God,
with a 10 doom.
I just realized part of the problem with asking David to shuffle some of the deck.
I guess.
He stacked his own deck.
So that is going to be, once again, a 30 intimidate against Trilobite. And maybe I'm going to shuffle these decks again. It's time to give yourself up, Trilobite. End this petty reign of crimes you've committed yourself to.
Awesome. You actually do see that Trilobite, while not the brightest, is trying to do some mental calculations of who are they more scared of, you or Overbite. And you see them kind of looking back behind them to see Overbite, who is a little distance off. You are clearly the closer, and so therefore probably the more intimidating, at least immediate threat. So what that is going to do is Trilobite, this round, will be racked with indecision. And so this round will not get to act.
Okay.
Very cool.
Armistice, you notice the other two members of the Kilobites, Overbite and Soundbite, also emerge from the hole in the wall. Overbite seems to be holding this kind of silver and gold box. You see on the side of it, it has maybe a couple of buttons, maybe there's switches. It's hard to tell. And Overbite is holding it somewhat protectively.
Armistice sees the other two members of the Kilobite gang emerging, and he knows that the rest of his team is very focused on finishing off the very real threat of Trilobite. From out of the left side of his body, a right arm emerges. And this one is holding a flare gun. And he is going to just fire it up into the air just to kind of try to get his party's attention. When also, of course, another arm coming from the other side of his body is pointing just a regular gun at the two emerging people.
What color flare?
I think Armistice believes that we have a very robust communication system based off of colors. I don't think anyone has bothered to learn his very complex. They have cheat sheets in their pockets, but they never reference them. So I'm going to say this is a...
Fuchsia with secondary vermilion?
Yeah, exactly. Which, again, they all know what that means.
Sure.
And I'm sure that the message will be actually better communicated by flare gun than if I just yelled something out and gave away my position.
Look, it's the arm signal.
No, that's different. I've told you guys so many times.
So that ends panel two. The four of you, four mutants, have been fighting two of the members of the Kilobytes, another mutant group. The news has been alerted, and you know that all of this activity, sooner or later, probably sooner, is going to alert the government's mutant police force, the Sentinels, and they are going to begin showing up. And by soon, I basically mean now. There is a rumbling sound, and it sounds like it's getting louder. It's kind of like this. And Armistice, you see Overbite and Soundbite kind of look to the air and then look up at an angle, at a direction, kind of from behind the fog cloud that Doppler Dude had created in order to help people get away. Over the sounds of the battle, you begin to hear a low roaring sound that gets louder and louder. The sound cuts off abruptly, followed a second later by a large crash and a shudder, as if something incredibly heavy just hit the ground. You turn to see a Sentinel, one of the mutant hunting robots designed to capture, restrain, or otherwise stomp out mutants and mutant activity.
Mutant DNA detected. Commencing Protocol 1.
You also recall that recently, in order to make them seem less threatening to normal humans, Sentinels have begun arriving with their own welcoming theme music.
Sure, naturally. Yep. The 80s were a weird time for comic books.
Mutants create hurricanes here in DC. Robbing, stealing, blaming. It's so crazy. They're out of control. And so we patrol Sentinels. Woo! Every day we're out there because we're Sentinels. Woo!
DuckTales.
Yes,
are you
was.
Sure? I would summon a sentinel just to hear that.
Yeah, yeah. Can we bring another one over?
Yeah, right. That was
shouting, oh, I see a mutant here!
You're part of the problem. or it's like the opposite, where it's like anti-swatting. You know,
yeah,
where it's
right.
Like you are using sentinel resources and get a fun bonus out of it
right.
by hearing that theme song every time. And so they can't be, you as a normal person are ensuring that they're not out hunting mutants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and theme song.
Yeah.
One of these sentinel, these mutant hunting robots, these things are probably close to 15 feet tall. They fly with these rockets in their legs. And this one has what looks like two enormous speakers that have been kind of aftermarket mounted onto its back. So, the Sentinel has joined the combat.
I hope it just has an instrumental version that plays as it's battling you.
Yep.
So, he knows what Sentinels are about, and he sort of knows what the kilobytes are about, but what he doesn't know about is this weird golden box that they are carrying. And he's not the smartest person in the world, but he says, villains have box that they want. Maybe villains shouldn't have box that they have in hand. And so he's going to try and shoot the box out of their hands.
Okay.
And he is going to specifically, because he can shoot twice in a round, he is going to try and do the classic Western, shoot it out of their hands so they drop it, and then shoot it another time to shoot it even farther away for them kind of deal.
Oh, excellent.
It's kind of the hopeful plan. I am going to use this 6 agility, so that gives me a 25 to hit.
Well, it's not really dodging, so yes, that'll hit. And ping, it'll kind of clatter a little bit further away. And you hear Overbite yell out, "No!" As your second shot sent that box careening out of the grasp of Overbite, you kind of, because you're observant, you see a little bit of movement kind of like in the corner of your eye. And it started off on the ground. You thought maybe a rat or something. But then standing there is a man who looks like maybe in his 60s, early 60s. He stumbles forward. And he kind of puts a hand on you and he says, "Armistice, tell me about the time skipper." And then he slaps the shoulder of one of your arms and says, "This is for luck." You can see these bright flashes coming from what presumably is the time skipper, this box that was lying on the ground. It begins to vibrate and a high-pitched wail emanates, the sound building so loud that you need to cover your ears. Flashes of multicolored light cause strange shadows to appear at the edges of your vision. You are suddenly blasted backwards and are falling, falling, falling. Out of the corner of your eye, you just make out the Sentinel and this device falling through a portal that seems to lead to an image out of your history books. Do any of you actually have any kind of history?
I'm a gargoyle and have lived for hundreds of thousands of years.
You notice it, and something in the back of your brain registers it as the Battle of the Bulge.
Oh, fuck.
Which you were there for, obviously.
Yeah. Obviously. Yeah.
In the front line, charging forward.
It seems to take an eternity, but eventually you feel the soft grass on your back. You don't know exactly when it happened, but at some point you were knocked to the ground. You blink, clearing the after images from your eyes, and stare up into a slightly overcast day. The chaos from the battle, gone. And that's where we'll end part one.
Weird.
What?
Tune in for part two of a valiant attempt at a reimage of the Dark Horse Marvel in DC next time on Reckless Attack. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
But also, what?
I'm so confused.